This is a moment in Wine and Hip Hop, brought to you by Crew Love, blending wine and hip hop at the highest level.
Wine and hip hop, wine and music.
Yeah, what's good, y'all? It's your man Jermaine Showtime Stone, aka the Wolf of Wine, aka the Zara Vibes, aka Young Thanos, because I'm just out here collecting Infinity Stones. Bro, I tell you, a little bit, your boy gonna have to have a few more AKAs, man. Shit is moving. It's a lot happening. Just wrapped up that good National Prosecco Week tour. Shout to Prosecco DOC once again. It's a lot in motion for the fall. And we're actually approaching the date for the 50th anniversary of hip hop. So I'm extremely excited, not just to celebrate that for myself and for this culture, but also what Wine and Hip Hop is going to be doing pretty much the entire month. You know, we got a lot of fun surprises for you in store this August, dedicated to hip hop, my first love. So this episode is very, very timely. November, the second annual Wine and Hip Hop Festival is on the way. I am so excited to announce that to y'all. We're gonna take this shit to a whole nother level. It's the 50th, so we gotta do it big. I'm pulling out all the stops. And today's episode is with Gurvinder Bhatia, editor-in-chief for Quench Magazine, our media partner for last year's Wine and Hip Hop Festival. Gurvinder is a great guy, extremely passionate about what he's doing, extremely passionate about diversity. And Quench Magazine is a big deal. It's North America's longest running food and drink magazine, and really a magazine that truly puts diversity first in its publication, not only recognizing the necessity of showcasing diversity, but also giving people from all backgrounds in the space in print and digital their own voices right from the heart. In every article, you know, even an article that I was in, they really focus in on letting people speak in their voice. Like, you read this article, you can hear Jermaine. But in addition to heading up Quench, Gurvinder is also a wine expert and has gained the prestigious and coveted title of an Italian wine expert from Vinitaly International Academy, one of only 16 people to hold that designation. So he's extremely knowledgeable, very passionate, has a great story, and I had a great time recording this episode with him. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode as much as we did recording it. Without further ado, my man, Gurvinder Bhatia. From Quench Magazine, all the way from Canada. Gurvinder, how you feeling, man?
Jermaine, I'm doing well. Great to be here.
Great. Well, thank you for making the time, man. We got some dope projects in the past. We have some dope upcoming projects. So I'm really, really excited to have you on Wine and Hip Hop and get our audience to get to know you a little bit, man. I feel like one of the best ways to get to know our audience and for our audience to get to know you is to talk about the hip hop artist that best represents you. You know, like, so if you could pick a rapper that embodied your style and your spirit and your energy, what rapper do you feel that would be?
You know, I think because of the way he combines the business with the art, I have to say Jay. I mean, Jay-Z, I mean,
I had Benzes, fuck, you had braces. The all black Maybach, but I'm not a racist. Inside's white in the Katy Perry's faces. Yellow diamonds in my Jesus. I just might learn to speak Mandarin. Japanese for the yen that I'm handling. International hoe, that's my handle. My Saint Chongon, light a candle. El Gran Santo on the mantle. Case y'all didn't know, I speak Spanish too. Shout out the worldwide west. Everywhere we go, we leave a worldwide mess.
It's that combination of the business with the art that I think takes it to a different level. And, you know, as much as I love wine and as much as I'm so, you know, ingrained in the wine culture, to me, it's still about, you know, building the business side of things, because unless you build the business side, it's not going to be sustainable.
Right, right. You enjoy the hustle.
I enjoy the hustle.
Nah, man. Listen, you know, so there's one of my favorite scenes from this movie, Paid in Full. Is there's this, it's an iconic scene. So these two guys, these drug dealers, Ace Boogie and Mitch, these are like the stars of the movie. Mitch is breaking down his, like, why he's doing it, because, you know, Ace Boogie, he's like, yo, dude, how much is enough, man? And Mitch is like, yo, look, honestly, it's not even about the money. It's just, I just love the hustle, you know? And he's like, I feel like I'm Magic or Bird or one of those ball playing guys, you know? Like, if I stop playing ball, are the fans still gonna love me? And it was just really interesting for them to break down that street side of it. And because no one talks about the rush that a lot of the people that are actually hustling are getting. They think it's just all, you know, these guys, and they think that the drug fiends are the only ones addicted to something. Let's say that. But, you know, and Jay-Z has a great, great song talking about that. So I love the Jay-Z connection, man. You definitely are a maverick in your space. We actually, it's interesting, we connected for that the Maverick spread.
That's right.
For Quench magazine, which was a huge honor. So can you tell our listeners a bit about Quench magazine and how you came to own it?
Yeah, you know? absolutely. And so, I mean, you know, Quench is actually the longest running wine and food publication in North America. Started in 1973, so this year, 2023, the magazine is celebrating its 50th anniversary. And I mean, I've been involved with the magazine for, oh God, probably about 22 plus years. I started writing for the magazine back in 99. I started doing some wine reviews and some, you know, small features, and then I became contributing editor.
And did you always, at that point, did you plan on growing as a writer? Did you always want to be a writer?
Well, you know, it kind of started in the sense of, I mean, I owned one of the early private wine shops in Alberta. And I mean, Canada historically is a monopoly run country. So every province has their own monopoly, and the government basically, you know, controls the importing and the retailing of alcohol.
Oh, and yeah, I've, in my logistics day, they call me the Wolf of Wine for a reason, man. I had to figure out how to get it into Canada. it's not easy.
It is not easy.
You got to write a lot of letters.
And so,
I'm sorry.
back in 1993, the Alberta government privatized the importation and retailing of alcohol. And I was, I'm a lawyer by profession. I was practicing law at the time. And I just thought that, you know, this was, there was an opportunity. I just thought that, I mean, I always loved, food, always loved wine, always loved bourbon, always loved beer. And I just thought that, okay, there's an opportunity here to do something interesting. And I kind of waited to see what the market was going to do. And there was a lot of mom and pops that opened up. There was the starting of some of the chain stores that were opening up. But I thought that there was a void in the market for a wine shop that had the boutique selection, but was accessible to everybody. I wanted a shop that had all these great wines in all different price points, but it didn't matter whether somebody was buying their first bottle of wine or whether somebody was stocking up their cellar and been buying wine forever. And so opened up the shop with the focus of let's expose the market to all these great small producers from around the world. And so we started working with a lot of the small importers that started at the same time. And we just exploded in terms of the fact that I didn't care if a wine was well known. I just wanted wines that were great quality. And again, in all price points.
What was the reception like for that? Did you understanding that you wanted that? Did you feel that there was a strong demand for that, or was that something that you were hoping to create?
Well, I was hoping that the market would accept it, and it was interesting because it started restaurants phoning me and saying, "Hey, we heard you carry this particular wine," and I didn't have the intent to become a restaurant supply store.
Right.
But as it turned out, there were so many restaurants that were calling us. At one point, we actually grew to be supplying about 100 hotels and restaurants in the city, as well as I started helping a lot of them with their wine program. And while this was kind of going on, I got a phone call from CBC Radio. And CBC, of course, is our national broadcaster up in Canada. They asked me. They said, we're looking for a wine columnist. Can you come do a wine column for us? And that was also in '99. And my idea for the column was, I've always been a big believer that food and wine get their context from people, place, culture, and history. I think, when you eat and you drink, it's easy. I like it, I don't like it. But to really connect with food and wine and to have people engage with food and wine, you have to give them context. And so
right.
I got, basically my whole thing on the radio was I was telling stories. I would talk about, where the wine is from. I would talk about the people that grew it. I would talk about, the historical context, the cultural context, and I had every Thursday morning for 11 years, I had 6 to 8 minutes, and I would just come on the radio and tell stories about wine, but put
that's
it in the
fucking cool, man. So do we got the Gravinder podcast coming soon? Like, what's going on, man?
Well, I'm waiting. Well, I tell you what, if it happens, which a bunch of people are telling me it needs to happen, you're going to be one of the first guests.
I'm here. You know how to get me, man. I'm here.
And so actually about the same time as I started the CBC thing, that's when I started writing for clients, because they, I got contacted about having somebody out west in Western Canada do some writing for them, and then I just kind of grew with the magazine and became wine editor for a number of years. And then, it was during the pandemic that our previous owner, who was fantastic and supported that magazine through everything, because Prince has had its ups and downs over the years, but he had supported it through thick and thin. And I think the pandemic was kind of the last straw to some extent, because in I think it was May of 2020, our editor at the time had messaged me and said that the printing press in Montreal, where the magazine had been printed for so long, got shut down for not being an essential service. And so it was like, and it was literally overnight. And so, here's a magazine that had been in print for decades that all of a sudden is no longer in print. And that's when I think a few months later, the owner, kind of said he was interested in selling it. And I think we all know, if he had offered it up to a big media company, we all know what would have happened. Big media companies love the idea of a niche publication, but once they take it over, they spend a few years and then, they cut the shit out of it. And, after a few years, they phase it out because it's not the profit center that, they think it could be. And so I didn't want to see the magazine fade away. We had so much work to do. Then there was also time for the next evolution. And so I thought, okay, let's actually take this thing over and let's actually, put this thing on the road to what that next evolution I believe should be. And I still, honestly, I still believe in print. As much as print gets bashed and as much as print has a hard time, I still believe that there is a place for print in this world.
No, 100%. I mean, and it's also a beautiful book, you know, which is, I think, a big component to that. There is not something that's going to replace that feel of the paper in your hands. It's the unique feel, amazing artwork, great layout. Like, there's so many things that come into that aside from, you know, the context of the magazine, which what I really like is that you actually put food and wine in a cultural context so that it's a bit more, a bit easier to digest. Can you talk a little bit about the types of stories that you look for and what your approach is to telling them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's the whole idea when I took it over was I wanted the magazine to be a much truer reflection of the society in which we live. And to me, that meant that the voices that are telling the stories that we're telling and how we're telling the stories, you know, have to be reflective of the world in which we live. And I get really quite annoyed when people say to me, oh, so it's a diversity publication. I'm like, honestly, I just tell them to fuck off, because it's the magazine is not a diversity publication. The magazine actually reflects the world in which we live, right? But because traditionally, you know, the food and wine media traditionally has been run by a very small part of the demographic of, you know, of the world in which we live, and it's been directed to a very small, you know, portion of the population. and so when somebody actually sees, you know, a magazine that actually represents the different faces and the different voices and, you know, the different cultures that and the different cuisines that actually exist in society, you know, it's so foreign to them because nobody's ever done it before. And so they think it's a diversity publication. But, you know, for me, it's really about just ensuring that we are, and I would say, you know, it's about cultural appreciation instead of cultural appropriation. Because so long, you know, we'd have these magazines or on, you know, on the Food Network or whatever it is, you know, you have some white chap who goes down to Mexico City, you know, and comes back and starts, you know, making this, you know, recipe or on a cooking show and claiming it basically, you know, as their own. They don't, right. You know, there was right. Never any, you know, referencing, there was never any, you know, indication that, hey, you know, let's actually give credit where credit is due, right? And, you know, the whole thing with the British baking show where, you know, they were wearing the sombreros and the ponchos, and you know, this is a couple of months ago. I mean, it's even with everything going on in the world, for a show like that to do that just shows how much further we still have to go for people to truly understand what is actually needs to be done. And I think, you know, what we want to be is simply the most inclusive and representative wine and food publication on the planet. And we want to do it because that's the way it should be done, as opposed to, unfortunately, I see, you know, so many of the other publications, you know, and you know, they put a person of color on the cover and go, hey, look at us, we're being inclusive, right? And it's bullshit. It's all just being done for optics. And is it a step in the right direction? Sure, absolutely. Because sometimes it's okay for people to do the right things for not necessarily, you know, the right reasons. They're doing it for, you know, they're not doing this because, you know, they think it's the right thing to do. They're doing it because they understand that if they don't do it, A, they're going to suffer financially. B, they're going to get a lot of flack and a lot of shit from the public. And they're missing out on a huge portion of our population and the society in which we live. So they have to do it, but they're not doing it for the right reason.
I will say that I do feel like we are now in a place with wine culture where people are genuinely trying to figure it out, you know, from one way or the other. And, you know, of course, absolutely, for many of the reasons, like it, business-wise, it only makes sense, right? It's that's the direction that the world's going. But I will say, out of all of the industries that have had this, like, you know, woke moment post George Floyd, where it's required that you do something, I will say that there has been a genuine effort that I've seen really across the entire wine community of taking a step. And every long journey begins with a single step, you know. So that is one thing that I am proud about our wine industry for, like the fact that this is, like, there's a want and desire and need for this, you know, things that we're doing. So it's really amazing, man.
And I agree with you in the sense of, and quite honestly, it's interesting because I agree that it's probably happening more in the U.S. There's more steps right. being taken in the U.S. than I see in Canada, even though, you know, Canadians, I mean, I'm Canadian. I love Canada. I love the people there and everything else. But I mean, right. Canadian.
Like, but I gotta keep it real.
Canadians have an ego complex. Unfortunately, Canadians believe that all these issues in the world, like racism, that happens in the States. They don't think it happens in Canada. And that's complete utter bullshit, right? And so I see actually more steps being taken in the U.S. wine industry than I see in the Canadian wine industry, because, and part of that's because the Canadian wine industry believes that nothing's ever, you know, been wrong with the Canadian. They don't believe that, you know, we have, you know, these issues in Canada, which is complete and utter bullshit.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's crazy. Like, Canada's usually so quiet. It really is one of those things I never thought about. Like, there has to be stuff that goes on out there.
There's a lot of shit that goes on up there. I mean,
I've never thought about that. That's wild.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, I mean, I you know, was born in Canada. I grew up in Canada. My mom and dad immigrated to Canada from India in 1964 to Winnipeg, so to, you know, the coldest place in North America on what my mom used to say was the coldest day of the century. And I thought she was just, just playing, but I actually looked it up and it actually was the coldest day of the century that they moved to Winnipeg.
Oh my goodness.
And my dad,
coming from India.
and my dad was, my dad wears a turban. My dad and his brother-in-law, his sister's who all moved to Winnipeg at the same time, pretty much. My dad and his brother-in-law were the first two speakers in Winnipeg. So here you have these two guys with turbans walking down Portage, Maine in the middle of winter, and people are looking going, what the hell? What's going on here, right? And so, I mean, and I grew up wearing a turban, and I was the first kid in school to have a turban. And, you know, people, you know, of course, it was always the same thing in terms of when people don't know, especially kids. I mean, when people don't know, the first,
right.
you know, indication or the first reaction tends to be, you know, here's the outsider. And it was something that was the more people get to know you, the more those things, you know, really go into the background. But I mean, but it was interesting because when I came down to the States, I lived in the States for 5 years, Chicago and St. Louis, to go to university. And it was interesting because I probably experienced less racism when I was living in the States than I did living in Canada.
Wow.
And that surprises the shit out of most people.
Just surprised the shit out of me, I'll tell you that. Damn, it's really... Because, yeah, Canada's so quiet. And even to think about... I think culturally I can definitely see how there is that stronger push for diversity. It's kind of like, you know, no pun, literally, like, we put our foot on the neck of the wine industry. Like, dude, mm-hmm. there's nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, it, like for what I do, you know, for example, diversity is my entire business. You know, I'm here, like, the entire ethos of my company is to change the perspective, to change the opinion of the black man in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to change the way people look at us. And something I realize is that with my wine background, regardless of what audience I'm in, I tend to have a way to connect with everyone. And I learned a lot through that. So that's why wine is my vehicle for doing that. And I think that something that's great about Quench is, you know, and similar to what we do is, like, I'm not here with a shirt saying, like, hey, I am diversity. I just do what I do. You know, exactly. I'm just being me. I am just, you know, the simple fact of what I'm here doing and the communities that I blend with, that is what diversity is. And, you know, you don't really just approach it from a perspective of bringing one nationality in there. You're really bringing all nationalities together. We trying to run them numbers up, y'all. You want to help grow the brand? Subscribe to the YouTube right now. Be the first to check out new episodes of Taste and Notes from the Streets, our fire visual and event series where we pair our favorite foods from the hood with different wines from around the world. I mean, if you only listening to the podcast, you're only getting half the fun. So subscribe to the podcast and subscribe to our YouTube. One. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the wine industry that you like to see? Like, what do you hope to accomplish with Quench?
Well, I mean, I think that food and wine really should be the great equalizer. I mean, food and wine are the vehicles that are so accessible to help people understand other people. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a term, you know, culinary diplomacy. I'm a huge believer in culinary diplomacy. I believe that if, you know, international relations were conducted over the dinner table, I mean, we'd have a lot fewer problems in the world. And, you know, from a wine perspective, I think, you know, because wine sometimes is a little bit more difficult for people to understand than food. And I honestly believe that when I first got into the wine industry, you know, almost 30 years ago, there was actually, I think, a stronger effort on the part of the industry to make wine more accessible and less intimidating to to the average consumer. Because back then, when I opened my shop, there was no Apothic and Yellowtail and all this kind of stuff. There was a lot of really great quality, inexpensive wines from, you know, the Douro in Portugal and all over Spain and, you know, Marche in Italy and just really great quality wines that would sell for $10, $11, $12. And what was happening then, as wine became a little bit more prevalent in mainstream society, instead of our industry saying, hey, this is great, you know, the average person who, you know, a geek is starting to get into wine, instead of our industry saying, hey, great, let's expose them to more and more of these really great quality, inexpensive wines from around the world, our industry said, hey, you know, people are, average person's getting into wine, let's make some shit, and let's, you know, let's force it on them, and let's create these, you know, these manufactured commercial brands that, in essence, what's happened is they, you know, it, to some degree, our industry has gone, you know, in two different directions where it's saying, hey, here's all this really cool wine for the wine geeks out there. And for the average person, it doesn't matter. They can drink the shit. It doesn't matter. They'll drink it anyway. And to me, that is so counterproductive for our industry. Forget about, you know, how disrespectful it is to the consumer, but it's counterproductive for the industry, because now our industry is saying, well, geez, you know, how do we get the consumer to drink better? And our industry, I hear too often people say, oh, well, the consumer, they don't care what they drink. Oh, this is what they're asking for, so we should just give it to them. And I'm like, I mean, the consumer didn't ask for that. The industry created that. And now the industry is trying to figure out, how do we fix this mess? How do we fix this shit show that we've created? And how do we get people to drink better?
It's kind of, you look from like the top down, and even you think about how people feel like, you know, no one wants to spend money on wine, and expensive wine sales are down. The reverence for wine is what's down.
Yeah.
You know, I think that people are spending the money.
They're spending.
They just don't want to spend it on that.
Yeah.
You have to help people appreciate it. And again, that's why I think it's cool that, you know, similar to what we're doing, a lot of what you approach things are, a lot of how you approach things is from a place of wine appreciation.
Exactly.
You know, like, but you're a maverick with it at the same time, you know. No, I love it. Like, when I think about the commitment that you have just to invest yourself in this business, you know, both financially and time-wise, everything, like, it's not, you're not someone that just, you know, liked writing and had fun talking on the radio and stuff. There was something that you were passionate about expressing. Can you talk a little bit about that passion and why you feel it's so important?
You know, if we talk about the magazine, I tell you that, I mean, nobody should be under, you know, any type of delusion that anyone's going to make money off of a magazine. I mean, the magazine's a money pit. I mean, plain and simple, it's a money pit, right? But but I mean, for me, it was always about whether it was in the wine shop, whether it was, you know, the radio column, whether it's my column on Global TV, whether it's in the magazine. To me, it's always about, I mean, it's food and wine. I mean, food and wine should be fun. Food and wine should be accessible. Food and wine shouldn't be something that there's any intimidation about at all, right? And so for me, it was always about, if somebody was in the shop, you know, and, you know, it was funny because I would, once we got fairly established, you know, I'd be in the office and I'd see, you know, a person who'd be coming to the store every week, and they'd buy the same bottle every week. And I would just randomly get up, and I, as I'm walking up to the till where the person's standing, I would grab something else off the shelf, and I walk up to them and I go, please, here, take this one instead today and try it. And, you know, and then I said, if you don't like it, come back and I'll replace it with something else in the store. And they would all, for, at first they thought I was trying to upsell them, and I'm like, no, it's actually $2 less than what you can buy. but my whole thing was, you know, because, I mean, wine, as much as we want wine to be not intimidating, of course it is intimidating, right? And there's so much to know, and the more you learn about it, the more you realize how much more there is to know and how much you don't know. And so for the average person...
Right. Just a language barrier. Well, like, I mean,
exactly, exactly.
No one likes to feel stupid.
Yeah, and so for the average person, it can be very intimidating. So my whole thing was, let's make this easy. And the way to make it easy is to ask the person a few questions, find out the style they like, and give it to them. The average consumer doesn't care and doesn't know the difference between Cabernet Sauvignon and Aglianico or Garnacha. They know that if you give them a bottle of wine and say, here, try this, I think you'll like it. And they taste it and they go, oh, geez, well, I actually do like this. They don't care what the grape variety is.
Exactly.
They don't care where it's from. They do know that, oh, this person has actually given me something that I like, and they're going to come back and they're going to go, hey, I really like that. Can you give me something else now? And this is how we built our exactly. business, was one customer at a time, really, in the sense that, you know, if I had something in the shop and, you know, if you know, for whatever reason, some magazine gave it 90 points or whatever, and people would come in and say, oh, hey, that got 90 points. I want to buy that. And I would actually say to them, I'm like, no. I'm like, you can't buy it. And they're like, what do you mean you can't buy it? I'm like, because I know you're not going to like it. So, you know, I think you're going to like this instead. And I mean, even my high-end customers, you know, they go, hey, this Super Tuscan got 95 points, give me 5 cases. And I'd be like, no. And they're like, what do you mean, no? And I'd be saying, you buy one bottle first. If you like it, then I'll sell you 5 cases. I said, because I don't want you coming back to me in 5 years saying, why did you sell me 5 cases and I don't like it?
Protect the brand.
Kind of how the approach that I took was, I was beholden to nobody. I didn't care. All the big importers were coming and saying, hey, we'll give you this. Can you put this on this wine list? Can you put this on your shelf? I was always, no, it's shitty wine. I don't want it. Thanks very much. And my whole thing was, I wanted to be... I actually wanted to be the person that the consumer could trust, that the industry could trust, and know that I was actually concerned about what their tastes and interests were, because in the long run, that actually benefited all of us, and including the industry.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, too often, we take a very short-term approach in our industry, not realizing or not wanting to realize, and partly because just how our society has evolved, that everybody is so, you know, short-term, instant gratification focused, that it's, no, if we actually take a, you know, bigger view, a big picture view that, hey, if we actually do things that are better for the consumer and the industry, everybody ultimately is going to benefit from that.
Right. No, it's really interesting, because even that approach, you can see how that shines through with what you're doing with the magazine. And really, it feels like the stories are very, very individualized. Like, what is some of the biggest, what do you enjoy most about this? Like, what has been like a moment that has made everything worth it been like for you?
I'm still waiting for it.
Ah! Like, yo, let me get back to you on that.
You know, it's been a lot of little things. Right. Because, you know, it's with the magazine, traditional revenue model for magazine is advertising and subscription, right? And so advertising is difficult. Advertising is a soul-sucking experience, and I hate it. And I would like to move to a model where we're not as reliant on advertising. Because I have to say, the one thing we will not do, we do not blur the line between advertising and editorial. And I've lost a lot of advertising because of that, because I will not put an advertorial in the magazine unless it says sponsored content. And I get advertisers, oh, can you write this article? Can you do this? Can you? And you can't. Other magazines do it. I'm like, I don't give a shit what other magazines do. We don't do that. And so we lose a lot of advertising because of that. So, I mean, where I get, you know, little, and they are, they're every once in a while, there's just this, you know, little moment to that I go, okay, we can keep going now. And I mean, there was one the other day. I mean, a client of mine has been a client of mine at my wine shop for, you know, 20 plus years. Even though, I mean, I haven't owned a wine shop in 7 years, and he still, you know, phones me to you know, acquire his wine for him.
Give the final approval.
Well, like, not just final approval, it's like, hey, can you find me X? Can you find me? And I'm happy to do it because he's a great guy. I mean, he buys a shitload of wine, and buys a shitload of really good wine. And, you know, the other day, his business, his group, which is across Canada, and so they are actually, I mean, he said, hey, we want to support what you're doing here because we believe in what you're doing with the magazine. So, I mean, they're purchasing a couple of thousand subscriptions for their top luxury clients to get it in the hands of the Bentley drivers and the Aston Martin drivers and, you know, all these guys, which is great because part of that is we can use that a little bit to kind of leverage some of the other luxury advertisers who then say, hey, this is actually the people you want to be in front of. So,
have 1,000 subscribers that are...
Exactly, know. Exactly. And so, you know, there's little things like that where people, you know, because, I mean, a lot of people talk about support, but, you know, the people who actually come to the table and say, hey, we believe in what you're doing, so we're going to do X. And something like that makes a huge difference because we are an independent publication. You know, like I said, I mean, we don't blur the line between advertising and editorial. And as a result of that, we do have to work harder than all the other publications. And we do have to spend more time. And we do spend more time on our editorial. We have to spend more time on our business model. We have to spend more time making those grassroots connections, going, you know, wine shop to wine shop to wine shop, hoping that the independent wine shops will actually, want to support an independent publication. And so it's something that takes so much more time. And quite honestly, if I didn't believe that we were actually doing something that was worth doing, I wouldn't do it. I mean, I've been in this industry for a long time. I didn't need to take on a project like this. I should be in semi retirement. I mean, you know, but I actually believe that we're playing a significant role in helping to make the food and wine industry more inclusive. And, you know, part of that is it's not just expanding the voices, but it's helping to expand the audience. Because it really has to be a situation where we're looking at all aspects whether it's the consumer, whether it's the industry, whether it's, you know, the chefs, whether it's the wine producers. I mean, what we want is, we want, you know, because food and wine is such a phenomenal thing. It brings so much joy and has the ability to bring so much joy. And it also has the ability to open your eyes to so much of our world that I think, you know, I want to be part of, you know, helping to make that something that is much more accessible, much more engaging, and much more relevant for a greater part of our population.
I got one, you know, we all wine and hip hop, so I got to hit you with one rap question. What's the last rap song that you played?
The last one that I played?
Yep,
probably.
It could have been last year. It could have been last 20 minutes.
Oh, it would have been last week. I was watching there was a documentary on TV a couple of weeks ago about the evolution of hip hop in the Bronx and in Brooklyn
was that on Netflix?
No, it was not Netflix. It was I'm trying to remember what it was called. That it was. It was one where Haitian Jack was being interviewed. Yeah.
Fox or something.
Hip-hop
underground or something.
Something like that. And so I actually
I was having a conversation about Haitian Jack literally yesterday. That's so weird.
And so I actually went got onto online and I started listening to, you know, a bunch of stuff historically, you know, I like, you know, the hip hop artists, and I like Ice Cube, I like LL Cool J, I like the kind of stuff that actually, and some of the stuff that almost, because I'm a little bit older than you, and so some of the stuff that I was first exposed to, you know, was way back when. I mean, the, you know, Grandmaster Flash, The Message, Public Enemy, and even
I see a lot of Public Enemy in your style.
And even though, I mean, even to the point of some of the early stuff that before I actually kind of really started to listen to it, but even when Blondie did Rapture, yeah, and he was kind of like,
that was a moment.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say the last one I probably listened to, I think it was probably Fight the Power, Public Enemy.
Fight the Power. Yeah, man, I feel like that might be, we gotta figure out, you know, with the episode titles, we always we mix a wine concept with a hip-hop concept. There's always a double entendre in every single title. You know what, I'm gonna run a little contest. I'm gonna ask that some of my listeners, I'm going to pick a title and I'm going to ask them to break down what the double entendre around that is. Like, I'll give you an example. For Yannick Benjamin's episode back in the day, the episode title was Wheels of Steel, you know? Mm-hmm. And, of course, Wheels of Steel is an important thing in the DJ culture. Like, that's what you call your decks. But at the same time, wine can sometimes be fermented in steel tanks, you know. But at the same time, Yannick also rolls in those wheels of steel, you know.
Absolutely.
So there's always like a lot of plays on words and everything that we do. Like the Andre Mack episode was called Deeply Rooted. Deeply Rooted is the name of a Scarface album. Scarface was also Andre Mack's rap spirit animal for that episode. And we have a deeply rooted history from way back. So every episode has a dope title. I'm going to figure out a way to involve Public Enemy and Fight the Power in this somehow.
Well, I've already got it. And so, I mean, stylistically, I mean, the lines I like stylistically are not the in your face, you know, the big powerful lines. It's the layered, elegant, fresh, juicy, you know, acid. I mean, I love, you know, the I love Marella Mescalese, you know, from Etna. I mean, I love, you know, really good quality Sangiovese. I love you know, some of the wonderful wines from the Douro in Portugal, Barada, Baga. I love Baga. I mean, so I mean, to me, you know, I don't want that big in your face powerful stuff. I want the stuff with the nuance. I want the stuff that the mainstream, you know, conventional stuff. I don't want that stuff. I don't want the establishment. I don't want,
you know, it's funny.
I don't want the authority.
I got the title, man. This is damn. I got the title. You were like P. Diddy, right? You were spinning some bars just now, man, and you jogged the wheels. The name of this episode is going to be Fight the Palate. Because you don't want wine that's going to fight the palate. You want an easy drinker, you know? So, yeah. But at the same time, you're revolutionary. You know, you are a disruptor. You know, so there's that connection to Public Enemy, man. So shit, that's a motherfucking mic drop. I don't know where we go from here. Like, I mean, wow. Like, so we got some really dope stuff upcoming. I don't want to give them too much, you know, but we do got a Tasting Notes from the Streets episode that is on the way, man. So I'm very excited for people to see that. That was kind of a game changer, man. I got to say, you definitely opened my eyes to a lot. Let's just say that.
It was fun. I mean, I think people are gonna really like the episode because I mean, you say you open your eyes. I think it's gonna open the eyes for a lot of people on a lot of different levels, both the food and the wine.
For sure. I mean, oh, and by the way, I had that 3, and I think I can take a 4 easily. Easily, like the 3 was nothing. The 3 was nothing. It was delicious, but I was good to go, man. I don't even think I had anything to drink with that.
I'm still waiting for you to take the 5.
It's gonna happen, man. You know what? I just don't want to make that jump. But yeah, so look, we're not gonna give y'all too much. Just know that it's a good one, man. It's a good one. Yo, Govinda, what you're doing is so fly. Of course, thank you for rocking with us. Thank you for rocking with Wine and Hip Hop. I want to make sure, like, everybody's a part of this movement. We all have a responsibility to do this. So how is the best, where do our listeners find you? And 2, how do we become a part of the movement that Quench Magazine is doing?
Go to the website quench.me, and on the website is a spot to subscribe, support through Patreon, join our social media channels, all that kind of stuff is right on the website, quench.me. Sign up for the weekly, you know, e-newsletter. There's lots of cool stuff on there all the time. I mean, my Instagram is govindervino_ on the go, which is funny. So today at the Vin Italy International thing, Stevie Kim was giving me a hard time about the fact that you own the biggest food and wine magazine in Canada, you're this big media guy, and you do nothing on social media. I'm like, the magazine does. That's what the magazine does. I fly under the radar. The magazine does.
Exactly. Damn, man. So what is on the horizon? Like, what are you excited about?
Oh, man. I mean, we're working on a lot of things. I mean, one of the things that we're really doing is we're planting a lot of seeds into the States. We've always been, we've always been the biggest in Canada. But when I took it over, I mean, we're Canadian based, but we are international in scope, in our editorial, in our writers, and in our audience. And so one of the my main focuses once we did the redesign of print was, we need to be in the U.S. I've been spending a lot of time in New York over the last 6-8 months. I'll be spending more time here. We've got some things in the works that hopefully we might be able to announce soon in terms of some really cool collaborations and partnerships. But the plan is that, New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Seattle, Austin, Denver, Boston. I mean, we have no desire to try do this mass influx in the U.S. because, A, we're small, we're independent. We have to be strategic about it, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to be very grassroots, create some really cool strategic partnerships with like-minded people, and get in front of people who love food and wine industry and consumer, and let's show everybody that an independent actually can make it and can make a difference.
Love it, man. I love it. And wine and hip hop is gonna be right there on the side, man. A lot of dope stuff coming soon. So yeah, man, this is it's always a pleasure, always a lot of fun. I knew you was gonna hit the audience with some game. I love that. I mean, that title is amazing. So you guys heard the shit happen live. That's never, you were here for the first time, man. So thank you for that, Govinda. This was all your you produced that title. You produced it.
Hey, I've been around long enough. I'm hoping I can come up with a good idea every once in a while.
Oh, man. Yo, Govinda, you the man, man. Thank you again, dude. This is awesome.
Thanks, Jermaine. It's been a pleasure.
This was a moment in Wine and Hip Hop, brought to you by Crew Love.